aware of these points, they do not understand the meaning of a human being, what is a purpose of this life, and what is a philosophy of this creation. Okay? Yeah. Because they lack, they have...
So now how can a religion like Islam can help us to prevent from going towards that way, that is from even thinking about committing suicide? Yeah, what you explained was a sort of rational and logical aspect of it. But can we see such a preventive, let's say, power in religion?
You know, if you go, if you mean that whether we have some kind of forbiddance, of course, as I said in the beginning, we have the strict forbiddance in this way. Mm-hmm. According to all the scholars, it is one of the grave sins.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that there are a lot of prevention for that. And for the person who have commit this suicide, that individual goes to hell, and a lot of punishment, you know, waiting for that individual. These are all Islamic points, but I want to emphasize on the point that we should have hope for future.
Very true.
Because then maybe you are in hardships, okay? But there is a great hope for future. Mm-hmm. Why you want to lose your hope? And you think that maybe these problems and hardships has kind of, you know, I can say, constructive role in your life.
Yeah.
It makes you stronger. It gives you patience. Patience is very important. And it gives you kind of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you know, has, you know, this kind of, let's say, hardship for you.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Do not forget this point. Sometimes these hardships are man-made.
Yeah.
Some people, because they do not have, let's say, good management for their life, or for example, they cause some problems for their life via their hands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I want to say that some people, some hardships are man-made.
Very true.
Or self-made, you may call it. Or has been made by, for example, a government.
Yeah. Sheikhana, when, again, a person who is like say, is looked at as a duty-bound person, he might say that, okay, for the sake of religion, in order to save religion and, let's say, the believers, sometimes I need to kill myself to save to save the lives of others, and to, let's say, to help others, and to save to safeguard the religion itself. Is a person permitted to commit a suicide in order to safeguard religion or another lives of the believers?
If you mean that, for example, these suicide bombers, they go and in some wars,
yeah,
do you mean that?
Something like that, and those who, for example, committed suicide by, let's say, taking some pills before they are arrested in order to, for example, as based on what they believe, to help the religion.
You see, these are, because when we talk about the suicide bombers, what comes into the mind of our listeners, you know, is about some Daesh groups. They, yeah. Unfortunately, they are very, they're practicing this point and this kind of suicide.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, these are not acceptable according to the, you know, this divine religion. Because there is no, as I said, by no excuse you can have this kind of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Maybe you imagine falsely that you're doing some favor to your religion. Unfortunately, some people, they are ignorant to the extent that they want to commit suicide and they want to perish their life for so-called their religion, which is not actually their religion. Mm. It is only because they are ignorant one.
Yeah.
And they do not have sufficient study, and they do not all aware about the reality of religion.
Mm-hmm.
These people have, unfortunately, foolish people. For nothing, they lose their life and they have suicide bombing and for any not acceptable, you know, excuses.
Many thanks, dear Sheikh, for your explanations and scholarly enlightenment. And you, respected listeners, for listening and staying tuned with Q&A and Islamic Beliefs from IRB English Radio.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Recent deadly attacks in Afghanistan have left Afghan families grieving. Some have lost their parents and some their children. Here we are meeting the family of Shahid Milad, who was killed in Tuesday's school bombing in Kabul. Milad's mother can't speak as she is in a flood of tears, mourning the loss of her young son. But his disabled father managed to speak with great sorrow.
Milad was a very diligent boy. It was his last year at school. He was preparing himself to enter university. He used to tell me that he was going to become a doctor and make a living so that his father doesn't have to work. He wished to serve his family and society, but unfortunately they took him from us.
In another alley in Hazara neighborhood, another family is mourning the death of a father after the attack on the school students. Mir Hussain went to bring his son home, but he himself fell victim to the second explosion.
My brother was on the roof when he heard a bomb explosion at the school. He quickly went to school to find his son Mahdi. He was searching around when the second explosion occurred. He was injured in the attack, but later at the hospital, we lost him forever.
Mahdi has survived the attack, but he is struggling with the shock of the attack and the pain of losing his father. Likewise, in the west of Kabul, there are many families whose beloved ones are either killed or wounded. They feel despaired and can't hold back their tears. It remains to be seen if the time can heal their wounds.
These days, Afghan families want peace and security. People here say they're terrified of repeated blind terror attacks. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A big rally was held in the besieged Gaza Strip to support Al-Quds in the face of rising Israeli aggression against the Holy City. Thousands of people from all walks of life came out to express their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli attacks. Tensions have been on the rise in recent days as extremist Israeli settlers, backed by Israeli regime forces, desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of Arab countries towards the Israeli crimes. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the Friday rally, warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
We will not leave Al-Quds as a prey for the Zionist enemy, and our people are united today in defending Al-Quds. The Palestinian resistance is very strong and will defend Al-Quds against Zionist attacks. Today's rally and the masses here are sending a strong message to the Zionist enemy. If these Zionist attacks against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque don't come to an end, our people will explode in the face of the Zionist entity.
Since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, the Israeli forces and illegal settlers have been trying to prevent Palestinians from gathering and performing their religious duties at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Al-Quds is sacred to all Muslims, and Palestinians consider it as the capital of their future state.
We are here today to show our solidarity and support for Al-Quds in the face of Zionist aggressions. All Palestinian resistance groups are here to send a message of unity. We will spare no effort to protect Al-Quds, and we call on all Arabs and Muslims to support the resistance and help us to protect Al-Quds and the Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians have expressed their willingness to sacrifice their lives for the sake of liberating Al-Quds.
Observers say the international community has failed to help the Palestinians in Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them for decades. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Islam's holy book, the Quran, is the theme of this expo. Held every year in the fasting month of Ramadan, the International Quran Exhibition opened its doors after 2 years of hiatus, driven by the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the 29th edition of the event has brought here exhibitors from Iran and other Muslim countries to present their religious products. While the expo displays exquisite copies of the Quran, it also gives a chance to IT firms to showcase online versions of the Holy Book, among other religious apps and software. The art section is one of the popular parts of the event. It features paintings, calligraphy works, and conceptual artworks, all themed with the Quran. The holy month of Ramadan is believed to be the month when the holy book of Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad some 14 centuries ago. That's why this exhibition is held during the holy month, which is also referred to as the month of Quran.
Every Muslim family has a copy of the Quran in their houses to read its verses and ponder its divine messages as many times as possible during the year, and especially in Ramadan, as the month of the Quran's revelation to the Prophet. Now, one of the major goals of this expo is to promote the instructions of the divine book, especially among the younger generation. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Braving the scorching heat while fasting, protesters took to the streets after Friday prayers across Pakistan to voice solidarity with Palestinians as tension continued to simmer in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Protesters here are outraged over what they call the double standards of the international community and the way they view Ukraine compared to Palestine.
Double standards is the biggest issue with international community. East Timor, South Sudan, Kashmir, Palestine, you name it. When Muslims are victims, they will always turn their backs on us. Therefore, I think it's about time to put an end to this collective behavior against Muslims on international stage.
Actually, we are being a Muslim, Al-Aqsa, the Muslims over there are brothers and sisters. If they're in pain, we are feeling the same pain in our body. The whole Muslim Ummah is like a one body. If one part feels is in pain, the whole body feels the pain. So we are feeling that pain, and we are gathered here to tell the world that they are not alone. We are with them.
Speakers at the rally stressed upon the need of unity among the Muslim world.
People are who are gathered over here because of, as you know, the situation which is going on in Palestine. Israelis are continuously terrorizing or they're attacking the innocent people of Palestine. That's why we are gathering in the protest to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Again, you know, the Jews, army and the military, paramilitary forces, they are not letting the Muslims over there freely praying and offering their rituals of the Ramadan. And everybody knows this is the holiest month of Ramadan, and this is very sacred to the Muslim.
The Israeli aggression against Palestinians has once again escalated during the fasting month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured by the Israeli forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque over the past few days. Mohammed Touri, Karachi.
Amid ongoing violence in Palestine, hundreds of London protesters mobbed outside Israel's embassy to condemn the regime's ongoing onslaught. The Islamic holy site in the occupied capital, Jerusalem Al-Quds, has been targeted with daily raids by not just regime forces, but also Zionist fanatics who seek to desecrate Islam's second holiest site during Ramadan, the holiest month for Muslims.
I struggle to comprehend how human beings can do this to others. It's occupation, but for the numbers of people that are happy to use their hate to hit and kill people, the anger that I feel and the sadness and the heartache for the Palestinians, it's difficult.
The unrest also sparked hostilities between Gaza-based Palestinian resistance fighters and Israeli regime forces as the two sides exchanged fire early on Thursday. The lack of mainstream media attention, despite the shocking footage which has emerged, has equally infuriated many onlookers.
It's not just me. Every Palestinian have been hit. With the fact that international law is very selective. The application of international law depends on the interests of these countries. And, you know, the major powers insist to keep putting Israel above the law, to keep shielding Israel from international scrutiny and international sanctions. And if this does anything, it actually exposes that the world is not serious about its own rules and laws.
This isn't the first time that the Israeli regime has conducted acts of aggression against Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan in occupied Palestine. However, global awareness of Israel's crimes is at an all-time high, and with future protest action planned over the next days and weeks here in London, the global reaction to what's been going on is far from over. Robert Carter, London.
Whispers with God on a night that's believed by Muslims to be a time when their wishes are fulfilled. It's called Laylatul Ghadr, or the Night of Destiny. Muslims observe the occasion every year in the month of Ramadan, when they congregate at religious sites to pray and make wishes. To Iranians, no place is better than the shrine of the 8th Shia Imam Reza in the city of Mashhad to keep vigil on the occasion.
Words cannot describe my feelings tonight. It's a night of destiny when God has promised to listen to our prayers. It's a night which the Quran says is better than 1,000 months. I'm so happy to be in Imam Reza's shrine on this divine night.
After 2 years, we once again can visit the holy shrine of Imam Reza, our beloved Imam, and that on the night of destiny. I wish that God will eradicate the coronavirus once and for all, for us to be able to live peacefully and visit our holy sites.
Islamic scriptures say Laylatul Qadr marks the night when the Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad. The Quran says on this night, angels descend on earth to listen to the prayers of worshippers.
We believe that on the night of destiny, angels come to earth upon God's order. The Quran says in its verses that the book was revealed to the Prophet on this night, and the angels will stay on earth till dawn. That's why we never miss out on this holy night and come here to pray.
No exact date is provided for the Night of Destiny, but all Islamic references are unanimous that the Quran was revealed to the Prophet on one of three different dates, the 19th, the 21st, or the 23rd night of the holy month of Ramadan.
It's the first time after more than 2 years that the Night of Destiny is marked without serious concerns over the coronavirus. And this has attracted this huge number of pilgrims to the shrine of Imam Reza to once again mark Laylatul Qadr en masse and at the same time reunite with their 8th Imam after 2 years. Yusuf Jalali from the Holy Shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad.
Violence, oppression, and desecration of holy sites.
Just more of the Ramadan reminders that Palestinians continue to live under occupation and suffer daily injustices. More than ever, international solidarity, especially in an age of social media, is important, with the atrocities being committed against Palestinians, raising awareness and exhibiting support is more crucial than before. This year's Fly the Flag for Palestine campaign is giving millions across the world the opportunity to show solidarity by displaying a Palestinian flag in person or online.
If we are not able to stand up at this hour of need and be supportive those Palestinians by holding a flag on our car, on our shops, on our homes, then what are we good for? And when are we going to do this? And I think what I have seen, ordinary people responding so fantastically.
In the lead up to the annual Al-Quds rally in the British capital, the global support for the campaign is in full swing. Organizers are encouraging participation in this year's event, and taking part could not be more simple. First of all, please post your image or your footage online, encourage a few friends to do the same, and of course, use the hashtag. As the global solidarity movement grows, so does the opposition, a fact not lost on pro-Palestine campaigners.
We got ministers coming and saying, they're going to refer us to the police for saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. It's outrageous. These are the same people that actually articulate that freedom of speech is absolute, and they go on and on. What's wrong with any part of the world to be free? What's wrong with asking people to be free?
So organizers are urging you to do your part. Lift your voice in solidarity and fly the flag for Palestine. Amina Taylor, London.
Yemen Civil Aviation and Meteorology Authority announced that the first commercial flight to Sana'a International Airport will start next Sunday from and to Jordan. Observers say the UN brokered agreement said there will be two flights a week from and to Egypt and Jordan, and allowing one flight only is not enough to help the humanitarian situation.
Announcing the start of one flight per week to Jordan is not enough and confirms there are no sincere intentions by the Saudi-led coalition to abide by the declared UN truce. There must be a full opening of Sana'a Airport and the port of Hodeidah because the humanitarian situation cannot tolerate more restrictions.
The Ministry of Health says thousands of patients, including children, are in dire need to travel abroad for treatment. Therefore, the United Nations should fulfill its duty and remove any restrictions on the two-weekly flights.
Yemeni patients suffer greatly due to the closure of Sana'a's international airport because they need to travel abroad for treatment. There are 30,000 registered patients in the higher medical committee, including children suffering from congenital anomalies and cancer. We demand the United Nations and the UN envoy open Sana'a's airport permanently and not for one or two flights per week, as it's not enough to help the humanitarian situation.
Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a deadly war on Yemen on March 2015 and imposed a closure on Sana'a International Airport. This closure has led to the death of thousands of patients, including children, especially amid the collapse of the healthcare system in the country due to the years-long Saudi war and the blockade.
Yemenis received the news of resuming the flights of Sana'a International Airport with hopes to see further flights to other destinations around the world. They say opening Sana'a Airport will save the lives of thousands of Yemeni patients, including children, who are in danger amid the absence of essential healthcare services. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
For the first time since the onset of the COVID pandemic, hundreds of people of faith and none gathered in the shadow of North London's Finsbury Park Mosque to enjoy a breaking of the fast in a public setting. The iftar, backed by the local council and organized by Finsbury Park Mosque, Muslim Welfare House and British Muslim charity Islamic Relief, was an opportunity for the community to gather, celebrate, and reflect.
It's good to show solidarity, Muslim, non-Muslim, Jews, Christian, all coming together to share a meal. This is a very powerful message that we are united. We are all at one despite our differences.
It's important because it's a very visible sign of the friendship and, you know, the togetherness that we have all through the year, actually. But and it's such lovely hospitality.
For me, it's an opportunity to, I suppose, show solidarity with my Muslim sisters and also, as Pauline said, to take part in this wonderful experience.
It's no coincidence that this gathering is taking place during Ramadan, one of the most revered periods in the Islamic calendar, a time not just for abstention and reflection, but to help those who are less fortunate.
Ramadan is a time when we're always thinking about our friends, our family, our neighbours, our community at large. And I think it's one of those moments when we can all gather together, especially after the last couple of years when we haven't been able to do that.
The street iftar party was first organised in June 2017, just days after the terror attack in the Finsbury Park area on Muslim worshippers during the month of Ramadan that cost one man his life and injured nine others. The public iftar was a way for communities to show solidarity and silence hatred with hope.
Tonight, we celebrate. We celebrate the achievements of the Muslim community in this area. We celebrate and thank them for all that they do, and we enjoy a wonderful iftar supper.
This is in memory of our beloved brother Makram Ali, who lost his life in this incident, unfortunately. And we are here. We want to have it every year to, you know, remember what's happened and try to bring communities together after what's happened. And this is the main idea, is to bring us together, to say to those who try to divide us and spread hatred, fear and division that you will not succeed. We are together and we will be always together. Islamophobia has no place in our society, and we should all fight it.
At a time of global disunity, one small corner of North London is showing there is another way. Amina Taylor, London.
The Journalists' Union in Damascus organized a ceremony to pay tribute to journalists who were killed in battlefields while reporting on the years-long war on Syria. Officials attending the ceremony praised the sacrifices of those journalists, who included reporters, cameramen, and employees of media outlets.
Syrian journalists had doubled the responsibility. They faced a ferocious war waged by huge media outlets on Syria. Journalists wrote their words in blood in respect of their job, homeland, and principles. We remain loyal to the blood of our martyrs.
It was unfortunately a long list of those who were killed, but a reminder of the sacrifices made for the sake of defending Syria. Families and relatives received certificates of appreciation, including one for Press TV correspondent Maya Nasser, who I proudly received it on behalf of his family.
This ceremony means a lot. It means that the martyrs are always remembered in the media outlets they work for. They sacrifice their lives for the sake of the country. We are proud of their sacrifices.
We used to miss him a lot, even when he was alive. He worked most of the time. After leaving for work for a whole month, we saw him once, and then he was killed. It's a nice gesture to honor him by the Journalists' Union.
Maya Nasser was killed by terrorists in 2012 while covering an attack on the Ministry of Defense in the Syrian capital. He was one of many journalists who was keen on being on front lines to deliver the truth and perform his duty. In Syria, tens of journalists fearlessly risked their lives, were injured or killed just to convey the truth amid a ferocious mainstream media campaign to distort the reality. Honoring those journalists underlines the crucial role the media plays in any war, especially nowadays. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
in the limelight.
Iran's envoy to the United Nations, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, speaking at the UN Security Council session on Afghanistan recently, said Tehran had done all in its power to support refugees from Afghanistan over the past four decades, despite harsh sanctions. We now present you an article written by Sayed Zafar Mahdi, a Tehran-based journalist, editor, blogger and author, under the heading Rabble-Rousers Sowing Seeds of Discord Between Iran and Afghanistan. In today's interconnected world, everything is a just a click away, including violent public disturbances. In recent days, social media has been inundated with fake videos purportedly showing the mistreatment of Afghan refugees in Iran. The unverified videos have circulated at a dizzying pace, fueled anger and sparked some protests by unknown men in the neighboring country, including attacks on Iran's diplomatic missions in Kabul and in Herat in Afghanistan. Afghan refugees always were warmly welcomed in Iran since the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Thus, it is a sheer lie to suggest that Afghan refugees in Iran are in any manner exploited or terrorized by the people or by the government. Some of the posts doing rounds on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram these days smell of foul play, making it emphatically clear that there is method to this madness. It's nothing new or astonishing, though. A tiny minority of troublemongers with divisive agendas have always been hell-bent on manufacturing crises between the two brotherly nations of Iran and Afghanistan. Most of the time, the flames have been fanned by forces inimical to peace and to stability in the region. The latest row was triggered by an incident at the highly revered Imam Reza's holy shrine in the northeastern Iranian city of Mashhad on 5th of April, when a man in his early 20s stabbed three clerics. One of them has attained martyrdom instantly, another succumbed to his fatal wounds later on in a hospital. The third person has survived. The assailant's identity was not disclosed by the authorities in the city of Mashhad, but local media identified him as Abdul Latif Moradi, an Afghan national who had illegally crossed into Iran from Pakistan last year. Moradi was immediately taken into police custody. The two martyred individuals included Mohammad Aslani, a senior cleric who was volunteering with the shrine in the holy month of Ramadan, and Mohammad Sadiq Darai, a 26-year-old cleric who breathed his last the day his national identity card was expiring. Both have left behind their loved ones, including small children. The graphic videos of the incident, shared widely on social media sites, showed the victims lying in a pool of blood in the main courtyard of the shrine, which is a popular pilgrimage site in the Islamic Republic of Iran. While the gory incident drew widespread condemnation, the reaction of officials in Iran was extremely measured, for fear of backlash against the Afghan refugee community living in the country. No threats were issued and no refugees were deported, unlike what you hear in some foreign media outlets. In turn, a senior government official in the city of Mashhad warned against playing into the hands of the enemy. Afghan scholars based in Iran also unequivocally condemned the gruesome incident, saying the assailant, inspired by the Takfiri thought, did not belong to them. Senior Afghan politicians such as former chief executive Dr. Abdullah Abdullah and a spokesman for the Taliban, Zabihullah Mujahid also condemned the cowardly attack. But the mischief mongers behind the incident were already ready with their murky games to vitiate the atmosphere and stoke tensions and discord between the two neighbouring countries. The soil on the graves of the two victims in the city of Mashhad was still wet when a flurry of videos took social media sites by storm, purportedly showing Afghan refugees being ill-treated in Iran. One of the videos showed a group of unruly men bashing two young boys, with police trying to intervene. The Twitterati alleged that it was Iranian men beating Afghan refugees without any evidence. Another video showed a man filming a young Afghan boy whilst harassing him, a horrible prank indeed. It's unclear where the video was shot, but what's clear is the motivation behind its leak now. One post on Twitter alleged that Iranian forces were harshly beating Afghan refugees and forcing them to leave the country. On analysing the video carefully, it appears that the video has not been shot in Iran, and the uniform worn by the assailants does not belong to Iran's police force. The unverified video sparked angry protests in Afghanistan, with a group of unknown men attacking Iran's embassy in the city of Kabul and Iran's consulate building in the western Afghan city of Herat. They hurled stones and smashed security cameras at Iran's embassy in Kabul. In the city of Herat, they tried to barge inside the consulate building, but the bid was thwarted by consulate guards. In contrast, Iranian officials refused to join the circus, calling on the rulers in Kabul to ensure the security of Iran's diplomatic mission in the war-ravaged country and uphold the rich history of brotherly relations between Tehran and Kabul. In a beautiful gesture, Iranian President Dr. Ebrahim Raisi joined a group of Afghan students in Tehran for iftar ceremony, sending a clear message to troublemakers that their bid to pit Iranians and Afghans against each other was not going to work. Iran's special envoy for Afghanistan, Hassan Kazemi Qomi, warned against attempts to sow discord between Iranians and Afghans and affirmed that foreign actors were indeed behind the protests. Iran has for the past four decades played host to one of the largest and most protracted refugee situations in the world. Iran is home to some 4 million Afghan documented and undocumented Afghan refugees, 1 million of whom fled their home country after the Taliban's sweeping takeover and the botched exit of the US military forces from Afghanistan last August. According to aid agencies, around 4,000 to 5,000 Afghan refugees have been streaming into Iran each day in recent months through informal border crossings, and they have been embraced with open arms despite Iran's own limited capacity due to crippling US sanctions. Iran's assistance to the war-weary Afghan refugees has been largely without any international aid at a time when rich Western countries have erected walls to prevent the entry of Afghan refugees into their countries. From prioritizing the vaccination of Afghan refugees to providing them with equal educational opportunities, Iran's approach to the Afghan refugee community has been marked by compassion and by humanity. Top United Nations officials have acknowledged the role played by Iran in alleviating the suffering of Afghan refugees, whilst urging the world to share the burden. The Norwegian Refugee Council an independent humanitarian organization, provided assistance to refugees across the world, also commended Iran for welcoming with an open arm and hosting millions of displaced Afghans for the past four decades. In a statement recently, the Norwegian Refugee Council called on the international community to step up support for Iran and urge rich nations to ramp up aid and keep their borders open to people fleeing conflict. While Iran, which shares a 572-mile border with Afghanistan, has, in line with its refugee policy, provided necessary assistance to Afghan refugees. But Iran has also continued to remind the international community of its responsibilities towards the people displaced by the 20-year failed military U.S. adventure in Afghanistan. During a recent phone conversation with the Taliban's acting foreign minister, Amir Khan Mottaqi, the Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian said, "Millions of Afghan brothers and sisters living in Iran for the past 40 years have always been provided with necessary services." The top Iranian diplomat Amir Abdullahian touched on a wave of malicious, calculated and false propaganda on some social networks, saying it is spread by those enemies and opponents of good relations between Iran and Afghanistan. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said, "The Islamic Republic of Iran has a positive and constructive view of Afghanistan." He added, "Iran's exchange of delegations for cooperation between the two countries, sending humanitarian aid and keeping its mission active in providing services to the people of Afghanistan has been within this framework." Iran's envoy to the United Nations, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, speaking at a UN Security Council session on Afghanistan on 27th of January this year, asserted that Tehran had done all in its power to support the Afghan refugees over the past four decades, despite harsh sanctions. Takht-Ravanchi said the financial constraints due to US sanctions were impeding Iran's efforts to assist incoming refugees. According to estimates, more than 96% of Afghan refugees live in Iranian cities, towns and villages alongside their Iranian host communities, while 4% put up in more than a dozen settlements managed by the Interior Ministry in collaboration with the United Nations Refugee Agency. While troublemongers are busy fomenting trouble, Iran continues to do whatever it can to support the Afghan refugee community, as it has done for the past four decades. There definitely are issues, but it is not the way they want you to believe.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I'm Zainab Sadat, and you're listening to Youth Station from IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is also Zainab Askari, a co-host of Zainab Sadat. Hi Zainab, assalamu alaikum. How are you?
Hi, thank you.
In this holy month, we have a very, very, you know, interesting day, interesting narrations, interesting things about Night of Destiny.
Since we're in Ramadan al-Kareem, May Allah accept your worships and your deeds.
Because it's said, you know, that the hours, its hours are the best of the hours, its days are the best of the days, its minutes are the best of the minutes. You know, we have narrations that a fasting person, his breath, his sleeping is all worship. So may Allah accept all that from you.
Yes, but you too.
Thank you.
As you know, we're going to talk about one of the most nights of this month, known as Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Destiny. Yes.
Zainab, is that one night or is that several nights?
You know, there are different narrations about when the Holy Quran was descended to our Holy Prophet Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. There are several narrations about the exact Laylatul Qadr. We have one special night of destiny. That night is quite different from other nights, since the angels, you know, the angels we have in Quran, Laylatul Qadr khayrun min alf shahr. This special night is better than 1,000 nights in a year.
Wow.
Yes, and the angels descend to the earth and they listen to whatever we say, and that is quite some kind of an offer.
All right.
You know, some kind of a big offer for us. We have different narrations that the Night of Destiny is whether on the 19th night of Ramadan or 21st or 23rd night of Ramadan. And we...
So it's just one night, but there's a doubt about
night,
the dates.
But yes, there is the discussion about the exact night. So...
Well, I am more interested about the night itself. The night, you called it the night, is better than 1,000 months. That is so much, you know.
Yes, yes.
So what is this night about? Why is it called as Night of Destiny?
You know, the importance of this night is due to the fact that we as people on this very special night have the opportunity to ask God to change our destiny. We can, you know, somehow enhance the situation for ourselves in the coming year.
So can we?
Yes, we can. And that is why people stay awake, stay wide awake all the night.
People carrying Quran on their head.
Yes, you know, they take a vow. They ask God to just
forgive their
mistakes and to bless them with his maghfira, rahma, or blessings, and bestow them his blessing. And that is why this night is so great and important for us, you know, because we can change something about our lives in this very special night.
Is there some particular time period, like for how long can you change your destiny?
I have heard that until adhan al-subh, until the
morning prayers.
Morning prayers. The night is considered as Laylatul Qadr until the
Night of Destiny.
Yes.
I think there are narrations that your destiny is written for a year or so. I have a question in my mind, like if we say that our destiny is already written, like when we are born, our destiny is written.
Yes, then, predetermined somehow.
Yeah, like how are we able to change it? Like, or what is the concept of making du'as or supplications, especially in this night, and when a person is born with a written destiny?
You know, yes, I accept that, and it is an accepted fact that our destiny has been pre-written from the very first day of our creation.
Okay.
Yes, we all accept that. But there are some opportunities that God gives us to just make changes in those things that are going to happen to us. For example, imagine a store or a shop, a big shop, that you every day go in there and just buy things you want. But on some special days in the year, the shop or the market offers some discounts, and you can buy lots of things with a much more cheaper price, in a much lesser price than normal prices. Yes, and Laylat al-Qadr is, if you want to put it in a comparison, it's somehow like this.
Okay.
God has given us the opportunity to ask him, to beg him, in fact, make our destiny better and our encounters in life would change.
All right. You remind me of the story. You know, there's a story wherein we say, like, I asked God, when I have a pre-written destiny, then why supplications? Why do us? Then why I need to ask you? Because it's already pre-written. My making dua or supplications does not make sense. Then the story goes on and says, God replied, maybe I have written whatever you ask me.
Yes.
So maybe it's in your destiny.
Beautiful. Yes.
Maybe whatever you ask me and I'll provide you that. So asking supplication is necessary. And with these supplications, with these, you know, du'as, we can change our destiny for sure.
Yes.
But I have one more question, since, like, you know, just to expand the topic. When our destiny is pre-written, or when we write our destiny in this night, making supplications, making dua, standing for whole night in the prayers and putting on Quran and on our heads and asking for prayers, giving Allah the name of all imams, telling him for his sake, please forgive me and give me this and that and that. We are making so many requests. I have this question that, do we even have choice? Like, whatever is written on that night, all right? So does that mean throughout the whole year, we don't have any other choice? We are left with no choice? It's all force?
No, it's not.
Okay.
When we're talking about the opportunity that we have in that night, it means that we're not forced. As I said, you know, our destiny has been pre-written. But
can we change things?
God has given us the opportunity to ask him and beg him, and
so we
will change things.
So we have choices, you mean?
Yes,
so like
definitely.
How I want you to
imagine that you don't have a house for yourself of your own, and in case you ask God and beg him in the Laylatul Qadr, night of destiny, to give you a house of your own. So, do you think after you're asking God on that special night, God would give you a house?
I think that house is not just a thing that God can give me. He can give me much more than I can even imagine. He understands.
Yes.
He
Very
knows
good.
He
yes.
is this, he's that. But there's a, like, you know, we have a concept of tawassul, the concept of connectivity in Islam. Like, you know, you refer to Ahlul Bayt, you refer to the progeny of Prophet Muhammad, or the Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, himself and his, you know, you refer to his family and you say Allah that for the sake of Prophet, for the sake of, you know, the Ahlul Bayt, for the sake of Imams, please give me this and that. And that's how you make the connection. God gives you everything. I'll give you an example. I just made a donation of some $30, okay, recently for the shrine of Imam Hussain Alissa.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no intention of, like, taking something back, asking Imam, begging Imam, please give me this and that for $30.
Yeah,
I just gave it selflessly with very much sincerity. And I tell you, I got something within no time. I received a thing in my home that I was in very much need of. And it costed somewhat around, say, $300. So something of $300.
Interesting.
Yeah. I donated just $30 and I returned. I got back $300 thing I was very much in need of. So without even asking, when a servant of God, Imam Hussain al-Islam, can give me, why not Allah? And especially in these nights, especially in the days of this month are called the best of the days. The hours are called the best of the hours. And these nights, the special nights, which you rightly mentioned, that are better than 1,000 months. So why not? Why he cannot listen? So he listens without you, you know, asking him. But Allah says, call upon me and I will respond. So I personally think that it's not all about the wealth, like the luxurious life, the house and all.
That's what I wanted to say.
I, as a human, think that this is better for me. But my Creator knows much better what is better for me, what is good for me, what is bad for me. And if I am asking for something and he's not responding to that, there is definitely some wisdom hidden behind. You know, he sometimes gives me back with some, he gives me good health. He gives me patience. He gives me extra. He gives me the opportunity to stay away from sins. That in itself is a great blessing. So yes. Not only he gives you back materialistically, he also grows you spiritually.
Blessings, yes. Yeah. Things that you need, but you even might not know what exactly they are, the things that you need. And definitely God has
plans.
Yes, God is the omniscient.
Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Here I think, Zainab, you know, let's give our topic a new direction. I think there are people who believe that when everything is written, what I am here supposed to do, I have life with force, I am living with force, and everything is by force.
Yes.
And especially they attach this force to religion. And when everything is pre-written, everything is by force, we don't have any choice. Do you think we don't have any choice in the life, like we don't have any choice of selection, which way to go, what to do? Because you came, you know, you are born in a particular country by force. You do not...
You're obligated to be born, yes. In this situation, your family members, you cannot change your family members. Yeah. You cannot change your features, your race, your gender.
There are a lot of things that are by force, but not everything is related to religion. For example, you get hungry. That's force. You cannot remain all the time like I say, I am book, I am not feeling hungry, I'm not feeling thirsty. Like in Ramadan, we feel so much of hunger and thirst.
Yes.
And so this is also a force, but it's up to me. We also have a choice. It's up to me what I eat. Do I eat haram or do I eat halal? Do I eat something that's forbidden or do I eat something that I have a choice to
eat. Am I permitted to eat or
exactly.
not? Especially in Ramadan.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So we have choices as well as force. There are certain things that are as force, but they are in all religions. They are natural. And there are certain things that are a choice. And we can change our destiny with the supplications, especially in these nights. Thank you so much, Zainab, for being
with us. You're welcome, and thank you for participating in this discussion and giving us lots of information. Okay, dear listeners, I ask you to keep us in your du'as and in your prayers on these blissful nights and days, and do not forget us in your special prayers in Ramadan.
You too, Zainab, do not forget me.
And you too. And
inshallah,
I need your du'as, really need your prayers and positive energy. Assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.